Bike sputtering on me.
That's not what you want on a cross-country trip.
Yeah, you're telling me. Looks like my journey ends here.
No, mate. You ride with Geico Motorcycle Insurance and got their 24/7 emergency roadside service. They'll fix your bike right up. Where you headed, anyways?
Oh, I'm going to Cromhenge. You ever been?
No, I can't say I have.
It's like Stonehenge, but shiny.
It feels good to ride with help. It feels good to Geico. Emergency roadside service is optional coverage.
The Home Show
with Sinead Ryan.
With Respa Beds.
On News Talk.
Hello and you're very welcome along to the Home Show podcast. This is News Talk's production about interiors, housing, homes and architecture. I'm Sinead Ryan, your host, and coming up on this episode, well, we are celebrating American Independence Day, the 4th of July. We have our favourite American, Gary Cohn, joining us to talk all things Americana. Think of Ralph Lauren and Tommy Hilfiger and all of that. Our exclusive wedding venue series continues to the Kingdom. We have John Brennan's Drumquenna Manor. And whatever you think of the Oval Office bling, well, Jenny Sheehan is here to talk about the Gilded Age. Well, we have the US to thank for so much of our design choices today, especially since the 1950s. And we thought we'd take a stroll through some of the best known influencers of Americana. And who better to walk with than the Home Show's favourite yank, Gary Cohn of Cohn Design.
You? I'm so good. Yes, look at you.
It's lovely to have you back.
Thank you. You look very summery today.
Thank you. Well, we do our best. Now, happy Independence Day.
Thank
happy 4th of July.
Yes.
Happy July 4th. How do you express Fourth of July.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
See, that's funny because when you write, when Americans write dates, they always write the month first.
Yes.
So
yes.
you say happy 4th of July.
We're just, you know what, just when we think you got us right, we're like, okay, we'll change it again.
All right. Well, listen, I am struck. You've brought in some of your favorite designers here with us. And I have to say, they're all pretty iconic. But I'm struck by how many of the people we'll be talking about are originally clothing designers who kind of tweaked into interiors.
That's correct.
And I'm just kind of curious about that pivot for them. Is it a commercial thing in a large sense, do you think? Or is it something that they genuinely kind of wanted to get on board with, having designed beautiful gowns?
Now, again, it's my point of view. It's commercial, okay? But what's unique about them is why they did this. Okay, so whenever you look at, well, I'll just fling a few names at you so people understand. So there's Ralph Lauren, okay, picture pops in your head. Martha Stewart, picture pops in your head. Calvin Klein, another one, Tommy Hilfiger, Donna Karan, Jonathan Adler.
These are definitely like just global brand names. There's no question about it. And when you hear some of them, you do get a picture in your head. Now, for me, when you're saying those names, I'm thinking of their clothing lines and the colours and all of that.
What else are you thinking? What else?
So let's start with Ralph Lauren. I mean, he is absolutely just one of the absolute best. And when I close my eyes and think of Ralph Lauren, I am thinking of red, white and blue. And those colours, for me, personify his design.
Yeah, but what else do you see, Sinead? What else do you see?
Well, I just see a really cool style. Somebody who has been around for decades and decades.
That's very good.
And has got so much better. And of course, he did a star part in Friends, which who can forget? Jennifer Aniston worked for him.
Yes. But think about what this man did. He's selling heritage. So as you know, Americans, what they're good at is selling things. So what everything that we're going to talk about right now is what Americans did was they packaged it and sold it back to you. Okay? I'm going to tell you that what Ralph Lauren did had already been invented. All he did was package it for you and made it more digestible and put an American flair to it. Okay? Because what you got is heritage. Okay. And in simple, it's like this old money look, this heritage. You got tartans, you get this.
Cabins in the wood, ski lodges, that kind of thing.
Yeah. But if you weren't in the US, where does that sound like?
You tell me.
I would say it's like England. It's like here.
Yeah.
It's all this old worldy Georgian. Okay. He just reinvented it, packaged it, put an American flair on it, and made this universe the Ralph Lauren universe, which now you you want to live in it because he's making it more obtainable, more casual, more, you know, oh, I love to live that. Oh, it's the Hamptons. I like that unique, that mystique about, oh, what was it like to have the dinner party and the beach and everything. He all turned that into a package, okay? But we love the package, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, it's kind of on the clothing side and maybe to some extent on the interiors, it's preppy.
Yes,
you know,
it's preppy.
It's that look that kind of, you think it's an everyman kind of look.
Yeah.
And you can kind of buy into a lifestyle even if you can't afford it.
You got it. So once you're bought into it, your mind actually says, oh, look, that tartan blanket, that would look wonderful. Oh, you know that old club chair that I want to throw away? You know what? If I just reupholster it in a fabric Ralph Lauren, which you have already, so you create this universe. He did.
Yeah.
He's very smart. Create this universe that already exists and give it a cool flair to it.
Okay, well, now let's move on to somebody that she's had a mixed career, it has to be said, and I still follow her on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I think she is absolutely unbelievable, and that's Martha Stewart.
Yep.
And she has done a double pivot because she is in the kitchen, mm-hmm. she's cooking, she's entertaining, she's mm-hmm. showing us how we should entertain and how we should do it effortlessly. She's kind of like the Nigella mm-hmm. of the US. And then she moved into the tablescaping and the interiors. So talk to me about Martha's checkered career.
All right, so let's just look at Martha. She's creating another universe, okay? You may not have known that she used to be, before she started, a successful Wall Street stockbroker.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So you see, again, Ralph was fashion. She was stockbroker. She had a passion for interiors. Mm. She launched her career into that. And her iconic viewpoint, her universe she chose, New England. Okay? Mm. So all this New England kitchens you have, thank Martha.
Yeah, the blues and the whites and the wood. You can nearly see the ocean outside from your three bed in Clonsilla.
Yeah, but think about what Ireland has. The same thing. What a smart woman she is. Of all these people who have similar things around the world, that she can create this universe for. And it's a beautiful universe. Mm. It's structured because you have all the shaker style happening. But she adds her colors to it, the soft New England colors, dirty blues, Dugek blues, and all the beiges and all these.
The neutral, and they're really timeless.
Timeless.
It's a bit like Nancy Myers, you know, the movies she makes.
Yes.
That's a real Martha Stewart look.
Right. You walk in, what year am I in? Yeah. I don't know, but I feel comfortable and everything. So she's all about perfection. So she's taking it and just not New England. By the way, I don't know if you understand, the New England style is a poor man's style because when the Americans first started, they didn't have stone. They didn't have all this oaks. They didn't have this. So they created a look based on what they would say the old world or the new world. And so they created the New England style, which today now is the style that we like.
Yeah.
Okay, it's just reinterpreted.
Okay, so, and she has done a phenomenal job in the process. So a very, very interesting career for her. Now, Calvin Klein, I'm afraid the first thing I think of, sorry to say, is underpants.
That's CK mind.
Brand.
Where is your mind?
Yeah, and maybe aftershave. It's a very male thing. I don't own any Calvin Klein clothes. It doesn't strike me as a brand I want to be kind of wear. I think it is kind of quite blokey. But you talk to me about his interiors.
Well, first of all, Sinead, have you ever been to a Calvin Klein store?
I have.
And what do you see?
I mean,
the design of the store.
Design of the store. Lots of neutrals. So really kind of the blacks and whites seem to be a big pivot. His initials on everything, which I don't like.
Yeah.
And just a sense of a kind of a structured layer. You're kind of being told how to dress, I think, when you go in there.
Sinead, you nailed it. You know, without you realizing it, it's neutral minimalism.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And so that's very structured. And so when you look at a Calvin Klein interior or what he's bringing minimalism. He's bringing, you know, no color. That black line, it might be the door handle. The furniture is matching the color of the floor and the color of the walls. It's all neutral minimalism. And he's creating that. Now, let's go back to your underwear. It's very minimal, his underwear. You're thinking of the white one with the band.
Yeah.
Structured, label, white underwear, classic, cannot go out of style.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And when you have a formula like that, you stick to it because anybody can do it.
That's right.
If you follow the rules.
But anybody can do it like Calvin Klein. It's different.
Now, next on the list, another iconic fashion designer who pivoted into interiors, and that's Tommy Hilfiger. Now, again, here's another red, white and blue champion, isn't it?
He is.
And maybe a slightly nautical take on it.
Good. You're very good. Very good. And so, excuse me, with Tommy, he's being very in your face about it. He's not being subtle about the Americana part of this, okay? And he's actually selling the American flag. Red, white, and blue. Red, white, and blue. All over. No matter what, it's always, 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 always. And so his take is basically bold pops of color and then some furniture happening. So it's like a bold pop and then furniture. It's constant repeating this. Now, I would say it's not everybody's style, and it can be a little bit too focused, if you know what I mean. He's limited his genre, right? Because let's face it, when the American flag sometimes is in style or out of style, it's sort of like, oh, do I want that or not? Mm. Whereas if you go to the other two, they can go on and on and on.
Yeah. So it's bolder, and there's no getting away from who has designed it because it's very obvious.
And it's nautical again. So we have the third preppy person, if you think about it, in that sort of preppy kind of feeling. Okay.
Mm. Okay. Now the one I want to come to then, who is absolutely fascinating to me because I don't know a lot about him, but I love this style, and that's Nate Berkus.
Yes, yes, yes.
Now, talk to me about Nate Berkus.
So Nate Berkus, he's more about accessibility, okay? So he's trying to take everyday items you have and make them fashionable. Or he's teaching you how to put them together in a very high-end way. So it makes everybody can have the look. So it's not one particular viewpoint. Look of like every they had the other ones had a genre. He's a little bit more broader, but he's bringing in all different pieces. They could be old, they could be new, they could be very eclectic in a very obtainable way.
Is he more maximalist than the other designers?
No, he's in between.
Okay,
he's in between because he can go more minimal. He's your average person wanting to do a home. He's there.
So you can kind of, if you follow his style and his route, you can work with what you already have in your home.
That's right. Okay. And then you can add pieces like maybe your grandmother gave you something. Oh, how can I put that in here? Maybe your aunt, you're like, instead of discarding it, it's like, how do I incorporate it in with what I have?
Okay. All right. Well, listen, there's no doubt that each and every one of them have brought something to influence design and really across the world, not just in America. And I think the running thread, Gary, has to be these are real. Pull yourself up by the bootstraps and show yourself off to the world. They really do encompass what America is all about.
They do. But if you look what I said from the beginning, they packaged it well.
Yeah.
So these things were not invented. They did not invent these. But what they did was they actually saw, packaged it, delivered it back so it's digestible. And now we want to live into it. And they bring their own flair to it. I don't want to discontinue. These are great designers.
Yeah, yeah.
And they gave their own flair to this.
All right. Well, Gary Cohn, enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you.
And enjoy the weekend. And thank you so much for giving us time on 4th of July to come in and chat to us about Americana.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Anytime, Sinead. Anytime.
That was Gary Cohn of Cohn Design here in Dublin.
The Home Show on News Talk. The Home Show on News Talk.
Now, we're heading to the Kingdom of Kerry now as part of our summer series on manor houses turned wedding venues. Well, now, Drumquenna is a 5-star establishment, and if anybody knows how to run the most exclusive of weddings, it is one half of the Brennan Brothers, hotelier John Brennan. John, welcome to the Home Show.
Good afternoon.
Tell us a little bit, make us all envious now, a little bit about the history of Drumquenna.
Drumquenna, it's very strange now, a strange history, because it was built by a blue-blooded English lieutenant in the army in 1890. 1995. And it was designed as a summer retreat entertainment house. And it has one of only six rooms in the world that has Chequers oak. So the main dining room in the manor itself is an oak paneled room from Chequers in England, which is highly unusual. But because it was built as an entertainment house, the main dining room can seat up to 100 people. Mm. So it's a huge amount of space in what's traditionally a country house. But interestingly, he never designed gardens. And English houses always had very fine gardens, which were designed by an Irish man called William Robinson from Waterford. Mm-hmm. But Drumquina missed the boat, and they never got, because 1916 came and they never got to develop the gardens. Oh, so we have a whole plan now to redevelop the gardens. And we've just put in a magnificent glass house as a centrepiece for the whole estate. And the grounds, it's a 5-year project, but we're on the road.
Indeed. And when you're developing houses like this, to be used as exclusive venues, which this is, and we've heard from many other owners in this series, I mean, there's an enormous amount of work and financing that's required to get it to the standard where it can be used for what couples expect nowadays from a wedding venue.
And honesty is the best you can do, and experience, and know that you're in safe hands. That's the bottom line. If you go to a venue and you meet the coordinator or whoever it is that is dealing with you, you have to have a gut feeling when you're walking out the door and say, yeah, I have no worries.
Yeah.
And I would always trust the property. If the property is professional and the property has a good reputation, I would trust the property, because every property, things work differently in. And there's reasons why one property does this and why another property does that. But every couple has been to loads of weddings. Mm. But no couple has planned a wedding. And planning a wedding is very different than going to a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
So I would take all the advice one would get when you go to see the venue. See if they're flexible in what you would like. Reason with them as to why you want this or want that. And if they say no, I would consider what you were thinking was probably a bad idea in the
first place. Right, okay. So go with the experts.
At the end of the day, a wedding is a happy occasion where you want to entertain your guests and your friends and have a good time. And there's like, we had one wedding a couple of years ago, and the groom drove me around the twist. Because if I said turn left, he'd say, no, I'm turning right. And there was no sense to it. So I was smart and I lost the head at one meeting. And I said, listen, I said, if you want me to serve sushi as a starter, I'll serve sushi. Oh, he says, I'd love that. I said, oh, no, please. So we served sushi. All right. And it was absolutely beautiful. But we threw out 90% of it because people don't eat sushi.
Don't eat it. And yeah, not at a wedding.
No. And
also,
you have to remember you're catering for a large number of people who have diverse tastes. And you are better off going down the middle of the road and serving them a very nice, properly made banana sandwich than trying to give them sushi.
Yeah.
Because they don't get sushi. And there was another wedding we had, actually very similar to the spell of weather we're after having. They were having a pea and mint soup, which was against my advice because it's a green soup and Irish people generally don't fancy a green soup.
Okay.
But we made the peas came from our own garden. It was absolutely glorious. And on the morning of the wedding, and this particular day was 26 degrees. There was a couple from Limerick. It was 26 degrees on the day.
Wow.
And I rang the mother of the bride, who was the lady who was kind of in charge of it all. And I said, listen, I said, the day is absolutely glorious. I said, would you like me to serve the pea and mint soup chilled? Which would be a common soup, chilled pea and mint. So we served it chilled and we did a lovely cream on top, and it was gorgeous. And no one ate it. Because number one, they didn't get it green. They didn't understand that. And number two, it was cold. So it was a disaster from my perspective.
Oh my goodness.
So you're better off.
This is not
the
time to be avant-garde with your menu. It's beef or salmon and just stick to the basics. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, wait till you hear this one now. I worked in this 50 years ago, probably, not quite, 46 years ago, I was working in a hotel in Sligo. And there was a waitress there called Josie. And Josie had been a waitress since the year dot. And I was in the kitchen, I was calling out the menu on the day, and the menu was probably egg mayonnaise, vegetable soup, turkey and ham. Okay. And she said to me, Mr. Brennan, she says, had they a choice? Meaning, was it turkey and ham and salmon? would have been a normal choice back in the day, you see. I said, no, Josie. I said, there's no choice today. Well, she says, I'm telling you, she says, I'm in this business an awful lot longer than you, she says. And she says, they always have a choice. They can take it or leave it. So Josie was up early in the morning.
Okay.
But anyway, no, you're better off. You're better off ensuring that everyone is going to have a good party, and don't underestimate the importance of entertainment at the drinks reception. That sets the tone subconsciously for the day.
Yeah, and that's a thing that I've been noticing at weddings I've been at. There's like a little string quartet in the corner, or somebody playing Spanish guitar, or there's little games out on the lawn, or just something to pass that kind of time between after the ceremony and before the thing starts.
Yeah, you see, that to me is a crucial part of the day, because it's the first time that your guests who don't always know each other are mixing and mingling. And some people say, oh, we're going to have the speeches during that, which is a formality brought into an informal social setting. And to me, you two playing at a drinks reception would be the best wedding you could have, because you set the tone the minute everyone arrives. And a string quartet is lovely, but a string quartet in my mind is first class for the church. Absolutely spectacular, because it's a serious part of the day, and the music and the entertainment should respond to that. Whereas at the drinks reception, in my mind, you need a trombone, you need a double bass, you need a bass drum, you need a saxophone, you need something that people's toes are going to go up and down.
Exactly.
Just or a Cuban trio or something of that nature that just sets a tone to say this is a party.
Now, are there many Cuban trios down in Kerry, John?
They're coming out of ears.
Right, and where else would they be, says you. Now listen, we talk about accommodation when we talk to some of these owners of manor houses. Some of them have only the accommodation in the house. They farm people out to local B&Bs. Others, of course, have built sheds and converted barns and all that kind of thing. Now, you have taken a step further, and I'll be honest with you now, I'm not normally one for a tent, but this is luxurious glamping on a different scale. Tell us about the
it's
glamping.
It's funny now. Yeah, it's funny because we have been extremely successful at telling the world that we do glamping. And we haven't been at all successful in telling people we have superb accommodation throughout the estate under what I call hard roofs. So we have potting sheds, we have courtyard muses, we have bolt hole, we have Blackberry Lodge, and we sleep 84 people.
Gosh, okay.
But we sleep 36 under solid roof. But we have no rooms in the manor. That we sell because it changes the conversation we have with a couple completely. Because generally when you come to a country house venue, you take over the whole place for a number of days. In Drumquinna, there's no such requirement to do that. You can have your wedding and you can all stay in Kenmare in 2-star, 3-star, 4-star, 5-star hotels. Thanks be to God, we have a fantastic range of accommodation right on our doorstep. We provide all the transport and people come by bus and then they leave by minibus for over a 3 or 3.5 hour period from midnight. So we look after everyone's needs, and we did that in 2012 because the world was a very different place in 2012. But actually it works extremely well, and I'll never change the format. But the tents and the glamping and all of that, yes, we have 14 tents on the grounds, but they have proper beds, proper pillow top mattresses, goose down pillows, proper 300 thread count linen, and they're technically a hotel bedroom under canvas.
All right, we have
more accommodation under a hard roof, and when we say sheds, I love when people come and they're staying in the potting sheds, because when you bring them over to it, it isn't a potting shed, it's a stunning bedroom, and it's much better than what they expect, which is a great reaction always when you walk them in. They say, oh my God, I didn't think it was going to be like this.
Indeed. Now, you mentioned transport then and the minibuses and getting people back, but you also have a different type of transport. People can bring their boat and moor it up and walk into the estate.
They can, or they could take Kenmare Bay Cruises or Star Cruises, and they could come from Kenmare, 70 or 140 people by boat, and pull up at our pier and then arrive, which is what a lot of people do day two. And actually, we did have, now that you're prompting me memory, we did have one couple who got married on the boat on the way down to Drumquinna. Now, wait till you hear this. Now, this is good fun. So the groom and all the guests got on the boat in Kenmare, and then I took the bride on my boat, and we went towards the big boat coming down with all the guests, and then the captain on the big boat went on the microphone and said, ladies and gentlemen, there's a fast boat approaching. There's going to be a collision. Please sit down. Brace yourself for collision. So So they all sat down, and when you're on a boat, you can't see out the front, you can only see out the sides. So they didn't know. And next minute we spun around the boat with the bride in the back of my boat, and then they all roared laughing. It was great fun. Then she got on the big boat, and they had the ceremony on the boat, and then they arrived at Drumquina, and we had the drinks reception and the party then, which was great fun. They were a good couple. They were a good crack. So it worked really, really well.
Janie, and then you've ruined every other wedding for me now, John, with that story. You look brides all over the place. Then,
the joke was that they got married then in international waters, and they had no rights.
Well, if they come back and have the baby there, and it'll have an international passport.
No, actually, would you believe it was their second wedding on both occasions, and both unfortunate circumstances. But they had one had four boys and the other had four girls.
Go away. Right.
Yeah, there was eight kids between the two of them. But they were kind of semi-grown up, the kids. But it was good, and they were great to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I threw the suggestion at them when we were at the show around, because of all the circumstances that they found themselves in, they didn't want it. And I love this. People say, we don't want a typical wedding.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
This is regularly said. Okay. Now, I'm sorry. You're a couple. You're having a ceremony. You're having a meal. You're having dancing. You're having a wedding. Okay.
That's a typical
You can dress it up any way you want, but that is a wedding. And unless you don't want a ceremony, you don't want a meal, that is what a wedding is. So we're better off to push within the boundaries of that, as opposed to trying to reinvent the wheel and doing something totally off the wall that may or may not work. And don't forget, if it doesn't work, it is a disaster. So you're much better safe than unsafe.
All right. Well, listen, you're in safe hands if you go down to Drumquina, for sure. And John Brennan, I suppose you're booked out for the rest of the year and probably pretty much into next year as well, are you?
It's funny. 2026 is not our best year by any means.
Okay.
And weddings go like this. It's very funny. And there was a man who owned a hotel in Kenmare years ago, and he used to drive around every car park of every hotel every night to see how busy they were. And he'd come in then to the Park Hotel and he'd have a drink at the counter, and he'd say, yeah, we're all busy tonight, or we're all quiet. None of us were busy if someone wasn't busy. It was like a tide. All boats rise in a rising tide, and they go down in a lowering tide. And same thing with weddings. So this year is not our best, because we missed it in April and May. We just had one or two weekends where we only had one wedding. But next year, for some reason, I don't know what happened next year, but next year we are very, very busy.
All right.
And even 28, we're into 28, which will be unusual for us to be that far in advance. But anyway, that's the way it's good.
Okay, well, listen, continued success and long may it last. And
thank
you for joining us. That was John Brennan, owner of Drumquina Manor. Now, it's big in Japan. Well, it is for a Cork-based timber company, GP Wood, which featured at the World Expo in Japan in 2025 and is now headed for another showcase. Here to tell us more is sales manager Michael O'Regan. Michael, welcome to the Home Show. Tell us a little bit about GP Wood and what it is that you do.
GP Wood's an Irish sawmilling family-owned business by two families with two sawmills in West Cork, and also comes a block manufacturing facility. So three facilities. We employ about 220 people directly, and processing over 500,000 cubic meters of wood a year.
Wow.
Between both sites. So, yeah, it's grown since both established about 1977 and grown significantly over the last 50 years or so. So it's going well.
Now, where do you get all the timber, and what timber is most popular for your business?
We use primarily Sitka spruce, which is it's all Irish grown, so from generally within 150 kilometres of the sawmills. Sustainable forests. We've the two state-of-the-art sawmills operated to the highest European standards of quality, performance, traceability, FSC, so all the certification that's required. And the growth in the industry over the next number of years is due to double to almost 8 million cubic metres per annum. So there's lots of opportunities for using Irish homegrown timber in construction, and we're looking to encourage more developers and to use Irish timber, not only for the benefits of the rural economy, but also for sustainability, CO2 capture, you know, so it's a good news story that we want to exploit.
It is a good news story, and I know that there are some government incentives for forestry and for farmers to convert to forestry, which are important, but we trail very far behind countries like Scandinavia, where, you know, they are pretty much world exporters on this stage. What more would you like to see done to have this become more sustainable in Ireland?
Well, for the plantation, new forestry is the biggest. The more plantation, not only it's a good economic problem or product that is quite sustainable and fit for purpose in a lot of through the industries, not just construction timber, but in packaging timber. And the CO2 capture from a climate point of view, it's also quite important going forward. So we're pushing for more and more plantation.
Now, you were at this major expo in Japan last year. There's another one coming up, the International Horticultural Expo, in 2027 next year, for which you are building gates. Talk to me about the gates. These are absolutely enormous.
Yeah, well, basically, what we got involved in, we were approached in 2024 by the OPW through the FAI, Forestry Industries Ireland, to know would we get involved in the Osaka project. We thought it was a good opportunity to showcase Irish wood in the world stage. So we processed, we received logs from Caolte, of Douglas fir, homegrown Irish Douglas fir, which is one a really nice, attractive product. So processed through the sawmills here, kiln dried it, graded it, and shipped it out to Japan at the end of 2024, for which then they built in the Osaka. So, but one stipulation we asked was that could, after the project was finished, could they reuse the timber? So TSB, the builders out there, said that they would look to find reuse for the timber rather than wasting it, because it was going to be dismantled after the showcase in 2026. And we got word there a few weeks ago that that's now being used in Yokohama, which is about 400 kilometres away, and it's been used for the World Expo, Agricultural Expo in 2027. And the main entrance gates is going to be all our timber in the front, and that's there for a longer period. As far as I don't know the full extent of how long it's going to be there, but it's great news that timber has been repurposed and Irish timber will be showcased. Everyone will see it as they enter the show.
Indeed, they won't be able to avoid it because they're absolutely enormous, about 90 metres high. And
a thousand pieces of wood being used.
Wow. Okay, and all Irish. Listen, it's a fantastic story and long may it continue. And it's wonderful to see Irish products like pine and fir being exported and used all around the world. And your part in it, Michael Regan, sales manager at GP Wood, continued success with that.
The Home Show on News Talk. The Home Show on News Talk.
Now, 4th of July celebrations here, and here to add to the gilding of the age is Jenny Sheehan, Workers' Cottage on Instagram and former Home of the Year winner. Now, when it comes to, like, I know when we think of gilding and gold, like, we're immediately brought to, I am anyway, the Palace of Versailles, which President Trump has taken such a shine to. Literally, that he's tried to recreate it in the Oval Office. He has literally just put gold on everything. Mm. And I think probably most people, certainly most discerning listeners of the Home Show, would think it's all a bit tacky.
Yeah.
It's hard to get it right, isn't it?
Well, he crossed the line into gaudy very long time ago, didn't he? And I think I love it. I love a bit of gold. I love a bit of gold. I love a bit of glitter, a little, you know, Versailles, it's opulent and it's over the top, but it's not horrible, you know.
Yeah.
It's not.
It was built as a kind of shock and awe thing back in the 18th century. It was like, look at us, how you're wealthy, we are, and they all got their heads chopped off in the end. But it's just stunning, and you had kind of mirrors were new and all that. Well, No. Trump has another few years to go, Okay, let's start with just by reminding people, what is guilt?
Guilting? So guilt. So it's really putting gold on anything or some kind of a brass finish. So obviously, solid gold, anything is going to be incredibly heavy and cost an absolute fortune. And actually, gold itself is quite soft as a material. So, you know, it's an interesting one to use. But gilding is really just putting a layer of gold or something gold looking, it could be brass, it could be something like that, on to other objects so that there is this lovely glittering gold display of opulence everywhere at a third of the price or, you know, a tiny fraction of the price.
Yeah, so it gave the appearance that it was more impressive than it actually is.
Yeah.
And actually, just an aside, in economic parlance, that's where the term gilt-edged comes from, because bonds that were had that little strip of gold around, it was like, we're good.
You need a tiny amount to make it look good, and it lasts for a very, very long time, because if you look at, you know, everything gilded back from ancient Egypt times, you know, they gilded things, and that has held up very, very well. So it's really effective. It lasts a long time, and it's a great way to show off just how bloody rich you are, you know.
It is. Now, that said, is this one of those design trends that where less is more?
I don't know. I'm so torn on this, because sometimes, I mean, I think it's one of those design trends or features, because you can't really call it a trend, right? It's been around forever. That in the right hands, it looks amazing. And in the wrong hands, it looks awful. And it's quite difficult to really specify why something is working and why it isn't, you know? Like, it's just taste. It comes down to taste. So it comes up and down, you know, throughout the years. It's kind of been around forever. And then kind of chrome took over for us in like the Celtic Tiger era.
Yuck.
And that was awful. And then it was copper. And then we loved a kind of a rose gold look and a copper look there for a while. And now it's kind of back again to we'll see a lot of brass, solid brass, or brushed brass or plated brass. So it's definitely back. Whether it works or not, I mean, it does a lot for interiors. I really like what it does. It looks really, really good. It's hard to say what looks good, because I love a lot of it. I think it can look amazing. I think there's people out there who've done it, you know, who've done incredible jobs. And we might talk about that in a minute, because, you know, I have a personal favourite.
If you see if you actually see gilding being done where it's used, now this is the kind of the top end, this is as good as it gets, this is proper gilding where they're using gold leaf. And it's kind of, it's not so much painted on as pressed on to a chair or to a picture frame or to whatever it is. It's a very technical job.
Yeah, so you buy gold leaf, which is really, really thin sheets, you know, literally microns thick sheets of actual gold. And it's not crazy expensive, you know, given what you get. And then you can apply it, as you said, to literally anything. So usually you put on a little layer of something adhesive, which kind of goes sticky. And then you very carefully press on these little sheets of gold with a little paintbrush. And then people often varnish over it or put some kind of acrylic over it. And it lasts for ages. And to that end, then you can cover whatever you want in gold and you can gild whatever you want. And people do this to great effect. Some people do this to great effect. I think it can look amazing. And I love a little pop of gold. Like, I have this quote that I always come back to whenever I'm thinking about a room or an interior. And it's from Kate Watson Smith. If anybody reads her, she's an interiors journalist. She's got a great blog called Mad About the House. And she has this great line that says, when designing in a room, have something new, something old, something black, and something gold. And so, you know, adding that metallic accent, it always does something. I think it always looks really, really good. Whether people go too far with it or not, I think just comes down to a matter of personal preference, doesn't it?
Where is that line, do you think? Because, I mean, obviously it is personal and everybody will be different. But, I mean, when we talk about even using metals at all, it's never as a main piece. It's always as an accent.
It's like an accent.
A frame or a chandelier or a lamp or, you know, it's something that doesn't kind of startle you when you walk into the room.
Yeah. And I suppose that is when the line is crossed. If you walk into a room and all you can see is that metal and all you can see is that accent. I think another thing as well that tends to overwhelm the eye when you're using some type of metallic accent is if you're mixing them and they're not cohesive. So if you have maybe brushed brass over here and then you maybe have solid brass somewhere else and then you have gold somewhere else and some of it is that kind of faded, older, you know, patina, worn-in
colour.
That's
not going to work.
Yellowy.
Unless, like, you're literally living in a 17th century Regency mansion.
It looks messy. Yeah. So having it very consistent and cohesive and the same kind of colour and the same level of agedness looks good. And I think you just have to keep going until you go, uh-oh, I've gone too far, and then take something
or
away.
Or maybe somebody else, a prime minister of another country walks in and goes, holy crap, what did you do here?
If there's gold being reflected on your face, yellow glow on your face because of the amount of gold in your hands, you've gone too far,
Okay, what designers do you like in this regard now?
Well, she's a designer, but somebody who's done this to great effect, and this is for someone listening who thinks I'd like to give this DIY gilding a go, is Tupi. So Tupi, the Irish jewellery designer, is really into gold. Wears gold all the time. She, you know, gold is her thing. And she has applied gold leaf all over her house. She put it on her stair risers. She made this beautiful arc on the wall, semicircle behind her bed, behind her headboard. She covered a door in it. Her entire kitchen is gold.
I'm looking at pictures here. I mean, you'd want an established personality to deal with this. But I think she knows what she's doing.
That works for me. Yeah. And I have to say, again, this comes down to talent and taste. I feel like if I tried to replicate this kitchen, it would look insane and it just wouldn't work. But it is working in her house. And again, her personality, you know, she loves gold. She's managed to make it work, I think. Right. I think it looks amazing. So if you look on her Instagram, her personal one, Tupi Sweetman, you can see how she's done this. I think she even gives steps by step. Yeah. And she's put a gold fringe on her couch, which I love so much. Yeah. And she's got gold accents everywhere. And, you know, for me, that works. Now, I think in the wrong hands, that could look like too much and it could be too much for some people. Personally, I love it. I think it looks great.
I tell you what, there'd be no shortage of conversation in her house if you're invited around for that. All right.
You'd be checking out your reflection every time you walk past that door.
Anybody else who's iconic in this space, Jenny?
There's really famous USA designers, of course. We have to go back to like that Gilded Age. So we have Dorothy Draper, who's like the queen, the OG kind of interiors influencer. So she had, you know, gold everywhere. If you look, she really influenced that kind of Palm Springs design, that really, you know, fabulous, fabulous design. And then there's Billy Baldwin, another incredibly famous designer. He designed this really famous hotel that is just gold and mirrors everywhere. Yeah. So, I mean, that's over the top. And then 10X'd, I think, you know, like it's so far over the top that it's come full circle and looks really amazing again. So I think that's really great. And then I mentioned Palm Beach, but that is such a classic, you know, of that kind of Gilded Age.
Gilded Age and also the Art Deco Age. I mean, I know when we think of Art Deco, we think of pastels and we think of that Miami Beach look, but actually gold and metal was phenomenally popular and really shown off on doors, on floors, all over the place. And it's a gorgeous time of design.
Yeah, I'd say brass, gold and mirrors. Mm. Really reflective, really shiny kind of hard surfaces and lots of glitter, you know, everywhere. And I'd love it. I think it's really fun.
If you're going to go with the gilding and the gold, you might as well go all out and showcase it with mirrors. I mean, there's really very little point otherwise sticking it in a north-facing room with no light.
It could look a bit dull there.
Okay, well, Jenny, thanks a million for all of that and a little hit of America there and jazzing things up a little bit. You might go off now and advise the current incumbent of the White House to tone it down. Maybe just
try.
Just a tad if he asks. Comes calling if he's listening to the Home Show.
Sure, any minute now.
Our Jenny can do it better. All right. And that's all we have time for on this episode of the Home Show podcast, which we were celebrating all things American. So I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to get in touch with us or suggest a guest or a topic you haven't heard yet on the pod, well, get in touch with us by email at thehomeshow@newstalk.com or directly to me on Instagram at SineadRyan100. My thanks to producer Eva Breen. Ben Sweeney was on research and Stephen McClune was on sound. If you like and subscribe, you won't miss any episode of The Home Show, and we look forward to your company next time.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Respa Beds.
Saturday at 5 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.